by mistake. It was an accident. Up until then, I had only ruined a few lamps. My alarm clock. They were talking about terrorists, I think. They were saying that they thought IAAN was because of terrorists and that they should leave as soon as possible to go back to Japan. I got upset and I didn't have a good control. I fried the engine and cars hit us. My mom's pelvis was broken. After she got out of the hospital, she insisted I go back to school that next Monday. It was the first collection. The collections were a series of pickups kept secret from children. If parents felt threatened by their children or thought they were a danger to themselves or to others, they sent them to school on specific days, and the PSFs picked them up. You mentioned you can control your abilities now. How did you learn to? Zhu shrugged. Practice? Not being afraid of them? What would you say to people who feel that letting Psy kids learn to control their abilities endangers others? She made her patented, "Are you kidding me?" face. Most kids only want to control them so they can feel normal. Why would I want to fry every light switch or phone I touch, every computer? There are kids who abuse it, maybe, but most of us, we're more dangerous if we can't control it, and everyone can learn if you give them time. How did you feel when you realized you were being picked up by the Psy Special Forces at school that day? Alice asked. I thought it was a mistake, she said, looking down at her hands. Then I felt stupid and small, like trash. The reporter's questions had clearly been designed to bleed Zhu's old wounds for every last terrible detail. A question about her daily routine at Caledonia turned into how the PSFs treated them on an average day, and then on days they misbehaved. It was excruciating to try to imagine it happening to her. Beyond that, to hear Alice ask, "You mentioned before that you only got out of Caledonia because you escaped. Can you talk about what happened?" Zhu turned, leaning slightly so she was looking at Liam. He'd been watching with his arms crossed over his chest, struggling to keep the emotion off his face. Now he gave her a small nod, this heartbreaking little smile. "Go ahead." "It was planned for months by my friend. He wasn't my friend then, but he was so nice to everyone, so smart. We knew we would only have one chance to get out, and he was it." She moved into the finer details of the escape, how they had communicated the details to each other leading up to that night. "Then it was happening. It was working. It snowed the day before, and there were piles of it everywhere. It made it hard to run, but we could see that some of the older kids were already in the booth, the guard box at the electric fence's gate. They were trying to disable it, get the gate to open. I don't know what was wrong. The camp controllers must have somehow blocked them. Then we just got..." Alice let her have a few moments to collect her thoughts before pressing, "You got what? How did the PSFs and camp controllers respond?" Zhu couldn't bring herself to say it. I remembered the scene so vividly, and I had only seen it secondhand in her memory. To have actually experienced it? I snuck a glance at Liam. He hadn't moved from his rigid pose, but his skin had taken on an ashen quality. Finally, Zhu lifted her hand, made a gun using her fingers, and fired in the direction of the camera. Alice actually flinched. "Why is that surprising?" I wondered. "Why would they feel any shame in mowing us down? How had they never even considered that possibility when they'd turned their kids over to a branch of the military?" "Are you saying they opened fire on the escaping kids?" Are you certain they were using real rounds of ammunition?
She said in a flat voice, "The snow turned red."
Alice stared at her notebook in her lap, as if unsure of where to go next with this.
"I don't think people see us as human," Zoo said. "Otherwise, I don't know how they can do the things they did. You could always see that the PSFs were a little afraid, but also very angry, too. They hated having to be there. They called us all different names. Animals, freaks, nightmares, bad words I'm not supposed to say. That's how they could do it. If we weren't human in their minds, they could treat us that way and not feel bad about it. That night we were like animals in a pen. Most of them shot at us from the windows of the camp's building. They'd wait until one of the kids got real close to the gate, and then..."
I didn't realize she'd attracted a crowd until I heard someone let out a faint gasp and found the remaining kids and Cole standing a short distance behind us. Most were focused on Zoo's pale face as she explained this, but Cole was watching his brother.
"How did you escape that same fate?"
Alice sounded genuinely invested, engaged.
"My friend, the one who'd planned it, they got the gate open. He came and picked me up and carried me out. I fell and couldn't force myself to get up and run. He carried me for hours. We found a car, this old minivan, and just drove for days to get away. We've been looking for safe places ever since."
"How did you survive out on the road? How did you find food and shelter?"
I don't want to say," Zoo said.
When Alice sat up in surprise, she added,
"Because there are so many kids who are still out there searching for those things, and I don't want to tell people where to look for them or how to wait for them to show up. There were a lot of ways to do it. You just had to learn how to stay invisible, not take bad, big risks."
"By people looking for them, are you talking about skip tracers?" Alice asked. "I looked up your listing in their network. The reward for recovering you and returning you to PSF custody is $30,000. Did you know that?" Zoo nodded. "Does that make you angry, knowing that someone is profiting off you that way?" She took a long time for what should have been a very easy answer. "Yes, I'm angry. It makes me furious."
"I don't know," she said finally. "Sometimes, yes, it makes me very upset. The price isn't a reflection of how much my life is worth. How could you calculate that? They take a flat amount, $10,000. And they increase it based on your abilities and how much potential they think you have to fight back. I think I'm okay with that price because it shows them I won't give up and just go with them. It says I'm going to fight to protect myself."
The screen on the back of the camera showed Alice zooming in for a tighter shot of Zoo's face as the girl continued.
"There are some men and women out there who live for it now. Not because they need the money, but because they like it, or they think they're good at it. It's messed up. They act like it's hunting season. But I think more of them have been forced into it. They need the money to survive. The PSFs have to do it because of the draft. I think if they stopped long enough to think about it, they would see that they're not really angry with us for what happened. Maybe they're afraid, but they're angry at the people who didn't protect them. The government. The president. They have no power to remove those things from their lives, so they transfer the blame. They act like IAAN was our fault, not something that happened to us. So the economy crashing? Us. Losing their houses? Us.
Alice started to ask another question, but Zhu wasn't quite finished yet.
I knew someone like that. He was a good person. Great person. The best. The thing is, if you want to be a skip tracer, you have to prove it. You can't get into their system or get any of their tech until you turn your first kid in, Zhu explained in an avalanche of words. She twisted the notebook in her hands.
I was driving to California with a group of kids, and we were being chased by these two skip tracers. Real ones. The hungry ones I was talking about. They made our car flip and crash so bad that one of my friends... he died. They were going to take me, but another skip tracer came in and got me out of the car instead. I was trapped by the seatbelt. I should have said that before. I couldn't get out and run like the others.
Liam swore loudly. I was too numb by the account to do anything other than listen.
Was he one of the ones you mentioned before? He needed to turn one kid in to start?
Can you tell us about him?
Zhu nodded. He was old. Not old, but definitely in his 20s. Maybe 27?
Alice gave a faint laugh.
27's not so old.
She shrugged before continuing.
We were in Arizona. I think he must have been from Flagstaff or Prescott. I'm not sure. He was really angry. Something really sad happened to him. I could tell, but he didn't talk about it. He was someone who just wanted to get out of his life, but he couldn't do it without money. No matter how many times he told me he was going to turn me in, I knew he wouldn't.
How could you tell? Alice asked.
Yes, I thought. How on earth could you have trusted this person?
I told you, he was a good person. He was really struggling. It ate him up inside. No matter how many times he tried to treat me like I was a freak, he always gave in. There were two chances to turn me over to the PSFs, but he couldn't do it. Not only did he save me, but he helped save another kid and got him back to the people who were caring for him. He was the one who got me to California.
The pieces of this were coming together for me now. Those people she was talking about were Liam's parents. That must have been the moment that she crossed paths with Liam's mom.
What happened to him?
His name was Gabe. Did I say that? His name was Gabe, and he was really kind.
What happened to him?
Alice asked again.
Gabe died.
Chubbs released the breath he'd been holding and scrubbed his face with his hands.
I'd known how the story ended, but it was still devastating. Seeing her face, hearing those two words.
What happened to him? Softer this time, more hesitant.
Alice looked back at Liam as if to ask if it was all right to continue to head down this path.
He nodded. He understood, too. She wanted to talk about this.
I had a feeling she agreed to this specifically so she could talk about Gabe and what he'd done for her.
The kids I was traveling with before, they beat us to California and were waiting at the meet spot we agreed on. We didn't know that, though.
Oh, God.
Gabe made me walk behind him as we looked around. It was really, really dark. We could barely see anything. When we opened the doors to one of the nearby buildings, the other kids were hiding in there. They saw him and recognized him from Arizona, and they thought he had followed them. One of the girls panicked and shot him.
I looked at Liam the exact moment he looked at me, absolutely stricken.
He was a good person, and he was just trying to help. It was a mistake, but there was nothing we could do. They thought he was going to hurt them. They didn't know what I did. He died because he helped me instead of helping himself.
That's terrible, Alice said, still looking for the right words.
Everyone is so afraid of each other, Zhu continued. I don't want to look at a grown-up and assume they're thinking of how much they can get from me. I don't want them to look at me and think of how badly I could hurt them. Too many of my friends are in pain. They've been hurt very badly by what they've been through, but they've taken care of me. That's the other side of everything. Because there are people who are afraid, and then there are people who are so brave. We only survived being hungry and scared and hurt because we had each other.
Alice let the camera keep recording for several more seconds before finally switching it off and sitting back.
I think that'll do for today.
Zhu nodded, standing up and setting the notebook down on her chair, and came straight toward Vida.
Did I do okay?
Vida held out her fist for a bump.
You killed it, girl!
Liam was half listening to whatever Alice was saying to him, half listening to hear what was passing between Zhu and Vida. He caught me watching him, and instead of looking away, he offered up a small smile. I felt myself return it, but the moment passed as quickly as it had arrived. What was important here was Zhu. The small blip of happiness I'd felt at that small ceasefire was nothing compared to the joy soaring inside of me as she talked to Vida, her hands moving to emphasize her words. And as I listened to the sweet way the pitch of it rose as she got excited, a thought began to stir at the back of my mind. I touched Chubbs's arm to get his attention. What part of the mind controls speech? He came out of his daze like I'd thrown a pitcher of ice water in his face.
It's a whole system, remember?
Right, I understand that. I guess my question is there something in your mind that could leave you silent or unable to process words, even if everything else seemed to be working fine? Now he just looked confused.
Zhu didn't talk by choice.
I meant Lillian, I said. Like, all of the lights are on in the house, but she can't get the door unlocked. She can pick up a few words here and there, but she can't understand us, and we can't understand her. Have you heard of anything like that? He thought about it.
I can't think of the medical term, but it's been known to happen sometimes with stroke patients. My dad had someone come into his ER once who'd been in the middle of teaching a lesson on Shakespeare, and then, 2 minutes after stroking out, couldn't communicate at all. It's expressive aphasia, or is it receptive aphasia? I'm not sure. I need to double check. One indicates damage in the Wernicke's area of the brain.
Inglés, por favor,
Vida said, catching the tail end of this. Unfortunately, you're the only one here fluent in Geek. He snorted.
Basically, we form what we want to say in the Wernicke's area of the brain, and then that planned speech is transferred to the Broca's area, which actually carries out the speech. I wonder...
What? I prompted.
Maybe Clancy managed to shut down or somehow numb those parts of her mind, or depressed them, maybe, so they're not functioning at full capacity.
He turned a shrewd look on me.
When you restored Liam's memories, what exactly did you do?
I was thinking about... I was remembering something that happened between us, I said. I was...
kissing him.
Reaching out to him somehow. It was kind of instinctive. I was trying to connect to something in him.
I was trying to find the old Liam I had given up.
Mirror minds.
Oh, I said, pressing both hands to my mouth.
Oh!
Share with the rest of us, Vida said, hands on Zhu's shoulders.
Your half is the only half of the conversation I understand.
I need to jumpstart her, I said.
Excuse me? Cole said, joining the conversation now. Who are we giving the shock treatment to?
You think you can reset that system in her mind, Chubb said, understanding.
But how exactly?
Clancy said something to me the last time I was in his head, I said. Mirror minds. I think that's what happens when I enter someone's head. I'm mirroring what's in their mind with my own. When I'm tampering with memories and searching through them, it's like I've set up a mirror between us, and all of those changes I'm imagining into existence are immediately reflected in the other mind.
Okay, Cole said.
This was going to be nearly impossible to explain. They had no idea what any of this felt like, and I wasn't sure I knew how to articulate it.
Thank God for Chubbs, though. So you think that if you engage that part of your mind, it'll engage that part of her mind, too, and reset it?
I held up my hands.
Worth a try? More than worth a try, Cole said. It's time we checked in on her anyway.
There was a bang on the loading dock door, one loud sound that came like a shot through the calm that had settled over the room. Liam jumped to his feet, a grin splitting his face as he jogged to the door. It was the only reason I let myself relax as he and Kylie unhooked the padlock they'd installed there, and the door rolled up, rattling like thunder as sunlight spilled in. I counted off the 8 kids as they came in, each somehow looking worse than the next, filthy in a variety of mismatched knits. We could smell them from where we were standing, which Cole chose to note with raised brows and an expression I'd seen Liam wear a dozen times. I recognized the new faces, but I hadn't been in Knox's camp in Nashville long enough to assign them names from memory. The kids there had been so hopeless, left with next to nothing by way of supplies, because Knox and a few of the others had taken everything they brought in for themselves. Now this group only seemed to be in slightly better shape. Between them, they had a few backpacks and makeshift bags tied together from old sheets. If I hadn't known any better, I'd have thought they walked from Nashville. Liam had reached up to start pulling the door down, but stopped, leaning out to wave the last two in. One, a tall blonde girl, stopped to clasp a hand on his shoulder. The other, an even taller guy, wearing a bright red checked hunting hat, dropped his backpack and stretched. Olivia, I thought. Brett. And sure enough, Kylie and Lucy rushed forward with a cry of, Liv! The girl turned toward them, and the other two were brought up short, actually skidding against the cement at the full sight of her face. One side of it had been burned by Mason, the red that Knox had kept prisoner in his camp, and had scarred badly as it healed.
Got a makeover, she said in a light voice. As you can see. Hi, Ruby.
Brett was there in an instant, running a hand down her long braid to rest against her lower back. I crossed the last few feet between us. Despite the fact that neither of us were particularly warm, cuddly people, I hugged her like it had been years, not a month, since we'd parted ways. It's good to see you, I said. It really was. You too, Brett.
Feelings mutual,
he assured me. I stepped back, letting Kylie, Lucy, and Mike approach her, hug her, bring her more firmly into the fold.
So this is Lodi, huh? This is it, Liam confirmed. We've been busy. Did you catch the news today? We did the camp hit I mentioned to you before.
You did it? Olivia said, blinking. I remember you mentioning it, but...
She exchanged a confused look with Brett.
It was all over the radio as we were coming in, Brett said. You guys do know that the Children's League is taking credit for it, right?
And just like that, the wind went completely out of Liam's sails. In fact, the air itself seemed to have been sucked completely out of the garage. It was Cole who walked over to the workstation, sending the kids standing there scattering as he switched on the radio. We'd caught the male radio host mid-sentence.
We've just received the following statement made by representatives of the Children's League.
I looked down at my boots, hands on my hips. Senator Cruz and Rosa came rushing in from the tunnel, Nico right behind them. The woman's face was pale as she opened her mouth to call out to us. The grave voice coming through the speaker prompted her news.
Early yesterday morning, we carried out an assault on one of Gray's rehabilitation camps located in Oasis, Nevada. We have taken the victims of his cruelty, the children interned there, and will release them only following the president's immediate resignation. Should these demands not be met, we will strike our next target.
Powerful words. If you're just tuning in, we have a breaking news update about the images and video released this morning by several noted papers.
They can't do this!
Zach shouted over the chatter buzzing around us.
They had nothing to do with it! They're making us look like terrorists!
Is this real? Senator Cruz asked Cole. Would they claim responsibility for it? Or is Gray trying to pin it on them to justify another attack on them? I think they're claiming credit, I said, feeling a need to inject a calm voice into the panicking fray. Gray doesn't need another excuse to attack them, and he's been scrambling to float the theory that everything was doctored. I guess it doesn't matter, though. The League has the target on their backs now, not us. Cole managed to wrangle his smug look, or at least dampen it somewhat.
Well, y'all have succeeded in putting another undeserved feather in their cap. But Ruby's right. This is a good thing for us.
The anchor continued, undaunted.
15 Psi Special Forces officers sustained mild injuries and were treated on site. All declined to comment on the treatment of the children and the rehabilitation camp when questioned before the arrival of ranking military officials. As of yet, there has been no response from President Gray, and Washington remains silent.
The unspoken words trickled through my mind, but not for long. Lillian was not only awake when we unlocked the door and came in, she was pacing the length of the room in the dark. She'd left all of the lights off, save for the one at her desk. Compared to earlier, she looked a little more presentable. Someone, likely Cole, had brought her wipes to clean off her face, a hairbrush, and a clean set of sweats. I'd seen her in press clippings wearing the costume of a first lady, suits, perfectly coiffed hair, pearls, and I'd seen her in Clancy's memory as a scientist, crisp and clinical in her white lab coat. Here, dressed like this, she could have been anyone. And that made it easier to approach her. Easier to do what I had to.
Hi, Dr. Gray, I said. Do you remember me and Charles?
Vida and Cole had both wanted to watch, but I'd been worried about overwhelming Dr. Gray with too many people around her. I needed her calm, or at least calmer than she had been while dealing with me before. The woman mumbled something to herself as she continued that careful stride back and forth. Back and forth, not breaking pace as she glanced over at her bed and the papers strewn over it. Suddenly, she stopped and pointed at them with urgency, her mouth struggling around each sound she was trying to make. Her entire body shook with her frustration as she pressed a hand against her throat, rubbing it. In that moment, I understood. Clancy hadn't just wanted to silence her from being able to tell others about the cure. He wanted to punish her in the exact way he knew would hurt her the worst. He'd taken her brilliant mind and trapped her inside of it. That's right. We want to talk about the research you did. She swallowed and tried again, looking as humiliated as I'd ever seen a person. I had to fight the urge to take her hand when she raised it toward us.
Chart.
Right. The charts. I carefully took her shoulders and guided her toward the bed. I don't know if she remembered what had happened the last time I was in here with her,
but she didn't struggle until I tried to force her to sit.
Ruby,
Chubb said,
are you ready?
Her shoulders bunched up, the muscles tightening beneath my hand. She was already preparing herself. She knew what I was. Diving into her mind the second time was no less painful than the first. Dr. Gray turned her memories into a roaring river I couldn't cross, a stream of landscapes, homes, roads, children's toys, textbooks, flowers, silverware, anything and everything she could think of to protect the important memories. But we were connected. That was all that mattered.
Ruby?
Chubbs was standing behind me. I knew that, but it sounded like he was talking to me from outside in the hall.
Ruby, what's, your favorite color?
My favorite color, I repeated, letting the word take shape in my mind, is green. The shift came midway through the word. One moment I was being dragged between scenes lasting no longer than a fraction of a second. The next, it felt as if I'd been thrown against a wall of glass shards. I recoiled, physically and mentally.
Tell me what your middle name is,
Chubb said. It's... The words brought me up closer to the pain, the sharpness of it. This part of her mind was so dark, so unbearably dark. It must have been painful for her every time she tried to speak, to use this part of her mind. He wanted her to hurt. Hurt.
What's your middle name?
He repeated. It's Elizabeth. I felt my mouth form the words, but I couldn't hear them over the rush of blood inside my own head. I have to push through this. This is glass. I have to break it. I have to get through it. Mirror minds.
Who were you named after?
Chubbs's questions were keeping me in that part of her mind. Every time I had to stop and think about what he was asking, the pain became slightly more bearable. Grandmother, I said. Grams. 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 The person who remembered me. Who I'd be able to find once this was over. I need you. We need you. My grip on her tightened to the point where I'm sure my nails dug into her flesh. With one final deep breath, I pushed against the wall as hard as I could, turning my mind into a bat and slamming against it until I felt it give with a deafening crack. I slid forward, forcing my way through. Until it shattered and cut the connection to ribbons.
Ruby, what was the name of our van? What did we call it?
Chubbs must have been shouting the question to me. His voice was ragged. Black, I mumbled, my mind in pieces, pain everywhere. Agony. Black Betty. I didn't slide through so much as fall past the remnants of the barrier. The world around me exploded into electric blue light. When I came around, rising up from the murky pain, I was flat on my back on the floor, Chubbs's anxious face an inch above mine.
Okay,
he asked, taking my arm to help me sit up.
How do you feel? Like I took a flaming knife to the head?
I got out around gritted teeth.
You were out for a full minute. I was starting to get worried,
he said. What happened? I asked, turning toward the bed. What? Lillian Gray was sitting at the edge of her bed, her face hidden behind her hands. Her shoulders shook, trembling with each gasp of breath. She's crying, I realized, rising up to my knees. I hurt her. Her face was red, swollen from the force of her weeping. The air in the room had shifted, a thunderstorm of feeling had rolled back, and what was left was weightless blue sky. When she looked at me, she saw me. Her lips pulled back into a painful smile. Thank you, She treated each word like the small miracle it was.
And then, without warning, I began to cry too. The pressure that had built in my chest gave way with the next heavy breath in and expelled fully as I released it. I did this. If I did nothing else worthwhile in my life, I helped this woman. I gave her back her voice. I hadn't broken someone. I'd put them back together.
Chubbs began awkwardly. Should I maybe,
I stood up, swiping at my face with a laugh. I'm going to find Cole, I said. Can you tell her what's going on? Make sure everything is okay?
I used the hem of my shirt to scrub my face once I was outside of the room, allowing myself a few steadying breaths before I looked in on the gym and office, then the big room, where kids were already sitting down with their plates of macaroni and cheese.
Right. Dinner. That meant...
I took the stairs two at a time, bounding down the hall to the kitchen. The kids serving there only shrugged and said Cole had come in and left with two plates. It would have looked too suspicious for me to wait outside of the storage room. I slipped the string I held the key on up from around my neck and glanced back and forth, making sure no one was watching as I went inside and locked it behind me. The overhead bulb swung with the movement of air, and the door behind the shelf unit groaned, not fully shut. It was curiosity, more than anything else, that made me step into that narrow hall. It was the first time in days I'd gone to see him. Cole had simply waved me off each time I offered to do it, saying it was better for me to stay away and avoid antagonizing him when he was already furious with me. That he'd been perfectly cordial, with no evidence of trying to influence Cole's mind. Now that she was back, I half expected Vida to be there, watching them from the small window in the door at the other end of the hall. But no, there wasn't anyone there, making sure Clancy wasn't running wild inside Cole's mind. If you had told me that Cole and Clancy would have been sitting facing each other on the floor eating, separated by only an inch-thick wall of bulletproof glass, I would have told you to keep your delusions to yourself. But there they were, the two of them, relaxing and talking with the ease of old friends. I leaned forward, pressing my ear against the door, catching snippets of conversation.
Wouldn't be any files on it. That's how confidential it is. The only reason I know it exists, still, is a PSF account. Worth it, if it means more boots on the ground. Don't discount the propaganda they're releasing. Try to use it to get your own message out there. Recruit willing soldiers.
10 minutes went by. 15. The elation I felt deflated into something that resembled dread. Not that the two of them were talking. I trusted Cole to take everything Clancy said with the largest grain of salt known to mankind, but that I was agreeing with what I heard.
The goal should be to keep as many choices open for the kids as possible, to not let someone sweep in with regulations on how they could or should be.
Clancy continued.
Is the senator even willing to stand up for their right to make decisions about their future?
The cure is another way to control us, take decisions out of our hands. I stepped back from the door, shaking my head. No. Helping Lillian was giving us a choice. We couldn't make a real decision without knowing what the cure was. Then why, all of a sudden, did the past few hours feel like such a mistake?
Nothing else you can tell me about Sawtooth?
Cole was on his feet now, taking Clancy's empty plate from the slot in the door. Clancy returned to his cot. There was a new, thicker blanket there now, a real pillow, too. A stack of books beside the bed stood up nearly as tall as the cot. Apparently, Clancy had been a very good boy, if Cole had been willing to bring him all of that.
You know everything I do. That wasn't the camp I helped set up. It was the original one, in Tennessee, Clancy said. Are you ever going to come in, Ruby?
I leaned away from the door, but it was pointless. His eyes shifted over to the window and caught mine through the glass. With a deep breath, I unlocked the door and propped it open with my foot. Cole's hand twitched at his side as he strode toward me. I was starting to have a hard time telling his apprehension apart from his irritation. I waited until we were back out in the hallway before opening my mouth.
"Don't," he said, holding up a hand. "I have this under control."
"Nothing is ever really under control with him," I pointed out. "As long as you're careful."
"You're killing me, Jim,"
he said, raking his hand back through his hair.
"What is it?"
"I think you have to see it to believe it." With the others occupied by editing Zoo's interviews and, at Liam's suggestion, giving their own, Cole and I were left to do the planning for an actual assault on Thurmond. We stayed up through the night, rehashing the details. I would go in with a flash drive on February 27th. On March 1st, our team of 20 kids and Harry's 40-odd soldiers would storm the camp at approximately 7 in the evening and engage and restrain the PSFs. I would need to get the program uploaded into their servers by a quarter till. The kids would then be brought to a secure location within walking distance of the camp to wait for their parents to retrieve them. Written out step by step, it almost sounded simple. The reality was stark. The morning officially began with Cole dropping a large blanket of paper over my head, startling me awake from where I'd fallen asleep at one of the computer room desks.
"What's this?"
I asked, pulling it away. At least 15 sheets of paper had been taped together to form a whole, cohesive image of rings of cabins, shoddy brick buildings, a silver fence, and the green wilderness around it. I jumped to my feet.
"This is Thurmond. How did you get this?"
In response, he calmly passed me a silver burner phone. There was something grudging in his expression, reluctant. I took it from him, raising it slowly to my ear.
"Hello?
Is this Ruby?"
"Speaking," I said, watching Cole's face as he watched me.
"My name is Harry Stewart."
There was static on the other end of the line, and it only made me grip the phone harder. Harry. Liam's Harry. His voice was deeper than I expected, but I could hear the smile in it.
"I wanted to let you know that last night we conducted an operation."
"We?" I repeated dumbly. Nico had come over to stand next to Cole, looking bewildered. I switched the phone over to speaker so that he could hear it as well.
"One you never cleared with me," Cole muttered. "A group of old retired army types," he said with a laugh. "Some new friends, too, who have recently had a change of heart about serving the president. This morning, at approximately 0200 hours, we conducted a raid on a suspected black site prison."
My heart actually stopped. I felt it throb, then nothing, as I held my breath.
"It was successful, and we were able to recover a number of suspected traitors and informants."
He said those words, traitors and informants, lightly, a thread of humor in his voice.
"We forwarded on what intel we were able to recover from the site, as well as from our own sources in the government. We'll be joining you by the end of the week, but I wanted to let you know that we did get your..."
His voice was muffled, moving away from the phone. I heard another voice, this one higher. A woman.
"Lie back down," I heard Harry say. "I'm glad you're awake. These gentlemen will explain what happened. Yes, you can speak to her in just a moment."
My heart was beating crazy fast. I heard it in my ears. I felt it down to my toes. There was a scuffle as the phone forcibly shifted hands.
"Ruby?"
Nico let out a cry, pressing his hands against his mouth. Hearing her voice? It couldn't have been real. Kate was...
"Kate?"
I choked out.
"Are you okay? Where are you right now?"
"Ruby," she said, cutting me off. "Listen to me."
Her voice was so rough, my own throat ached in sympathy.
We're okay. We're all okay. But you have to listen to me. Something happened with the League, didn't it?
I heard Harry in the background saying,
It's okay, please lie back.
Cole braced his hands against the desk.
Connor, what's going on?
We overheard some of the guards posted there. They were taunting us. They said that Kansas HQ's going to be attacked. None of the agents, none of us can get a hold of anyone there. Can you warn them? Can you give them the message?
We'll take care of it,
Cole promised her. Nico had already moved back to his computer station, his hands flying across the keyboard.
You sit tight. Harry's going to bring you guys back up here.
The agents want to go to Kansas, she said, her voice strained.
Well, they might not have a choice,
Cole said, not unkindly.
Hey, Connor, it's great to hear your voice.
You too. You taking care of my kids?
Cole gave me a small smile.
They've been taking care of me.
Ruby? I'm here.
The words came out of me in a rush.
Are you okay? Tell me you're okay.
I'm okay. I'll see you soon. Understand?
I'm sorry.
Dial tone. I stared at the device, letting Cole reach over and turn it off. I didn't have the strength to fight off the numb dejection that bled through me. I needed more than that. She had to know. She had to know how sorry I was.
They're driving through the middle of nowhere,
he told me.
Bad reception. Harry will call again when they get closer.
I nodded. Do you think it's true? They're going to attack Kansas HQ?
Their servers are offline, Nico said. I just tried to ping them and nothing. I'm going to try to make telephone contact with some of the agents who are still out in the field. See if they know.
Cole tucked my hair behind my ear, ran a knuckle down around my cheek.
This is a solid win. Kate's okay. We have an actual fighting force coming. 2 weeks and we'll be on the other side of this. Focus on that for now. Don't let this Kansas thing trip you up. As far as I'm concerned, it doesn't matter either way.
Of course it matters, I said. So many people have already died.
I get it, he said. I didn't mean it like that, only that the League is done either way. Claiming the hit as their own was a desperate last gasp for relevancy. Focus on the future. The cure, now that we have Dr. Gray back in working order. Thurmond.
He tapped his fingers on the printout.
Harry went to all that trouble to track this down for us. Let's put it to good use.
He stood, taking the printout with him to tack up on the wall. I stayed where I was until he left, presumably to make good on his promise to investigate Kate's claims, and then rose, moving toward the satellite images of Thurmond's grounds, as if in a dream. My eyes traced the rings of cabins, lopsided, uneven rings, apparently. Seeing it from above, like a free bird passing overhead, smoothed out the sick feeling that had started to squirm around in my stomach.
It's much bigger now, Nico said.
I nodded, accepting the permanent markers he handed me. He stepped back to lean against the desk and watch. The longer I worked, the more attention I seemed to attract, until I knew I had a full-fledged audience without ever needing to turn around. I labeled each of the larger structures, factory and PSF barracks, on the two rectangular-shaped buildings to the left of the rings of cabins, garden on the square of green at the northernmost point of the camp, and mess hall, infirmary, and gate on the right. Then I moved on to the cabins and marked the circular control tower.
Each ring of small cabins was outlined with either the green or blue marker to indicate its inhabitants. I felt the focus of someone's gaze between my shoulder blades like sunlight coming through a lens, burning until I couldn't ignore the small waves of self-consciousness that began to rise. It was irrational, but it felt like I was revealing something shameful, something I had to be embarrassed about. My mood had slid so quickly from eager excitement to horror and pity that I felt myself start to prickle in self-defense.
"Are there only greens and blues there?"
I turned around at Senator Cruz's question. She stood in the doorway, her arm looped through Dr. Gray's, who seemed to be trying to come closer. Nico took one look at her, froze, and then fled to the back of the room, almost tripping as he sat back down.
"There were yellow, orange, and red children," I answered, looking back at the women. "But they were moved out of the camp about 5.5 years ago. The reds were taken into a training program, Project Jamboree. The yellows were moved to another camp in Indiana that specializes in non-electrical containment."
"What about the orange kids?" Dr. Gray asked. My hand stilled, as did the air around me.
"We have no confirmed reports of their whereabouts," I said.
"Where is this?"
Dr. Gray's words were still slightly halting, as if she half expected them to start failing her again at any moment. She took a step closer, taking in the patches of wild grass and snow. If anyone looked hard enough, they would have been able to see the little dots of blue uniforms working in the garden.
"This isn't Thurmond," she said. "Thurmond was only one building. I saw it myself."
"Once they moved the initial research programs out, they rapidly expanded the camp to house more kids," I said. "I've added a little R, O, or Y next to the cabins they used to reside in. They switched out the non-electrical locks on the yellow cabins and never changed them back. As far as I know, the red cabins only had additional spigots and sprinklers inside." Senator Cruz put a hand on my shoulder, and she leaned forward, inspecting my work.
"Why were the reds and oranges in the second ring from the center instead of in the outermost? If they were going to cause problems, it seems like they'd try to move them as far away from the control tower as possible."
"They surrounded them on either side with a buffer of green cabins," I explained, "so that if they tried to attack the camp controllers, or tried to escape using their abilities, they'd have to burn down a few kids on their way."
"Did that ever stop them?"
I shook my head.
"Did anyone ever escape?"
I shook my head again. "The ones who tried were shot before they reached the fence. They kept at least one sniper on the roof of the control tower at all times, two if a group was working out in the garden."
"Well, that kills what little faith I had left in humanity," Cole said, coming back in.
"Any luck?" I asked him.
"Nada," he said. "We'll talk later. Right now, can you walk us through a typical day? I'm sure you had some kind of a routine, right?"
5 a.m., wake-up alarm. 5 minutes later, the doors unlock. After that, it changes by month. They gave us 2 meals a day, so if you didn't have breakfast scheduled, you went to the washrooms and worked for the next 6 hours until midday, when they gave you lunch. Then you had time in your cabin for about 2 hours before you started an evening work shift, usually some kind of cleaning, like laundry or mucking out the terrible sewage system that always got backed up. Then dinner. Then at 8, lights out.
"My God," was Senator Cruz's only comment.
"There were over 3,000 of us," I said. "They had the system down to the second. They even figured out how to accommodate for the shrinking number of PSFs once everyone started finishing their 4 years for the draft."
"What would you say the ratio of kids to PSFs was?" Cole said. "Ballpark it."
I'd already given him this information in my plan, but he was asking for the benefit of the two women in front of me.
Kate told me there were usually 200 in the camp at all times, plus an additional 20 bodies working in the control tower. There may be fewer now that they're in the process of closing the camp. I shook my head. It doesn't sound like a lot, but they're strategically placed, and they're given permission to harass and bully the kids. For someone who had been so involved in researching a cure for IAAN, Dr. Gray looked sick at all of this, like it was her first time hearing it. That seemed impossible. Certain things were bound to be confidential, but her husband was the president. He'd played an integral role in the development of the rehabilitation camp program. She looked away.
You're like my son, are you not?
Yes, I said, but not in the way that matters.
Were you there at Thurmond while he was?
After. We didn't overlap at all. I didn't arrive at the camp until they'd already started to expand it. Is there a reason you're asking? She cocked her head to the side, and I fought off the shudder that threatened to move through me. The simple movement was Clancy. All Clancy.
I'm assuming that the reason I'm here is because you want to know about my success in controlling the children's psionic abilities, she began, straightening in her seat, as well as Lita Corp's final assessment as to the cause.
You got it, Cole said. So, naturally, our question is, what you want in return?
It was straightforward and to the point, and still, I was somewhat shocked by it. I don't know why I had expected her, a Gray, to do this out of the goodness of her heart. I had hoped, I guess, that the apple had fallen far from the tree in that regard.
Can we speak somewhere with a little more privacy?
She asked, glancing through the glass windows at the kids moving through the halls.
Sure thing, Cole said. Nico, grab us if you hear any chatter about Kansas.
We followed him upstairs, past the groups of kids moving between the rooms in the hallways, all of whom seemed oblivious to who the blonde woman was. When we reached the office upstairs, Cole motioned for the two older women to sit as he walked around to the other side of the desk, and I locked the door behind us. Dr. Gray leaned back against her chair, her dark eyes taking the small room in with one glance.
This was John's office, wasn't it?
I'd somehow managed to forget the fact that the Grays and John Albin were once close personal friends. Albin had helped the First Lady disappear, sponsored her research trials, made a deal with her.
Oh.
You want us to hold up Albin's end of the bargain, I said. You'll give us the information in exchange for being able to perform the procedure on Clancy first.
Cole let out a soft whistle.
I was under the impression it's a kind of operation. You couldn't expect to be able to perform it here.
Of course not, she said. You could scrub every inch of this place with bleach, and it still wouldn't be clean enough for an operation. I would need you to quietly help me set up a time it can be performed at a local hospital, where I'll have trained staff.
That's a tall order, Cole said. There's almost no way to keep it quiet.
Once the procedure is complete, the plan has always been to take Clancy and go into hiding. I want a return to a life that resembles normal, with the son I once had. The cure is another way to control us, take decisions out of our hands. Clancy's words worked through my mind in a whisper. I listened.
I started to say. What was really my problem with this, though? Clancy had proven over and over to me that he couldn't be trusted to use his abilities in a way that wouldn't hurt others. East River, Jude, how many times did he have to show me the lengths he would go to? All to avoid becoming what he'd been at Thurmond. Powerless. I'd felt his helplessness when he was strapped down on the table at Thurmond. The pain of having volts of electricity shot through his mind. I'd felt the embarrassment of losing control of my functions,
the fury of being treated like an animal. He'd save himself before a group of thousands. This time, we had to choose the thousands over him.
Okay,
I said, when it was clear Cole had been waiting for me to respond.